My name's Russell, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group, and I haven't found it necessary to have drinks since January 25th, 1981. And I'm grateful, and I really feel privileged about being here. I've really been looking forward to coming up here. You know, it's it's interesting. I, as you'll probably realize during the first 15 minutes, I don't plan anything I'm going to say. So, you know, we have no idea. I have no idea what's coming out. But when you said about you were going to, you know, thinking about calling me and whether, you know, I could make it, I was reflecting when I had a few years sobriety in Miami. They asked me to chair the intergroup banquet. I know you guys have an intergroup banquet here at Miami-Dade, and I chaired the intergroup banquet 2 years in a row. And the first year I brought in Johnny Harris, and the second year I brought in Clancy. When Johnny came in, you know, I was very, I escorted him around. I was driving him around, and he's an incredible speaker from California. And of course, I sort of grew up listening to tapes of speakers and listening to people like Clancy and Johnny and different people. They formed part of my we. You know, it says in the book that I call it a step before the steps. They say, well, it is a step before the steps, because it says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So if you want to take the book at its word, which I tend to do, I tend to take it literally. You know, I mean, I'm a rationalizer from way back. You know, I like to tell myself rational lies, lies that make sense to me so I don't have to do the stuff they tell me to do. You know, so I could say, well, that's your program, not my program. But but if you take the book literally, and as time goes by, I do take it pretty literally, it seems to indicate that, you, in a sense, you're not really even ready to take the steps unless you somehow have a desire. I don't know how to give somebody a desire to want something. And I guess there's a lot of people that, you know, one of the lines I say is we have a lot of people that come in here and they don't want what we have. They want what they had. They want the car back, or they want the wife back, or they want the thing back. And I guess that can get you there. Eventually you can go into it. Or they want what we have, but they're not willing to do what has to be done. But they say, but obviously, one of the first things that I guess has to happen, and what happened to me as I look back on it, you know, obviously all these things after almost 33 years of sobriety, I've looked back. I've learned a lot of stuff. This isn't stuff that I knew at 3 years or 5 years or 10 or 15. And, of course, this, as it goes without saying, this is all my opinion. This is my story, my experience, my opinion. You don't have to get upset about it. This is what works for me. You know, it's okay. And, you know, I tend to say things that upset people, which doesn't really bother me anymore because at least they're thinking about me. And you'll get upset about something I say, and on the way home I'll say, why did I say that? And I'll change my mind. So, you know what I mean? It'll be... But obviously, one of the things that happens is you develop a we. You develop a person or a group of people that you sort of look up to, you know. And I think part of being an alcoholic, Carl Menninger wrote a book in 1934, I think it was 34, it said, in the chapter of alcohol, Carl Menninger was a renowned psychiatrist, he said, in the chapter on alcoholics, and I assume addicts and a lot of people, it says, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. And anybody who looks at their own life or looks at the life of alcoholics and addicts, whether they have money, whether they have charm, whether they have talent, whatever it is, has to somehow come to the conclusion that we have to go out of our ways to get ourselves in the jams we get ourselves in. It's almost like the only people that could kill us is us. I mean, I don't care whether you're a movie star or whatever the hell you are, somehow, no matter what talents we're given, no matter how much money we're given, no matter how many breaks we get, we manage to wind up the insane asylums broke, you know, or committing, so we manage to just... that's just the way it is. And I hate to use the word like self-hatred, you know, or something like that, but there's something about being an alcoholic that has something to do with thinking that you're a piece of shit. Yeah. Excuse my language, but, you know, that's basically what it's all about. Sometimes you got to use the language. I mean, there's no other way of trying to express what it feels like to have tapes running through your mind saying, I wish I was dead, I'm a piece of shit, nobody likes me, the constant thinking negative things about yourself and other people, constantly worrying about what other people, always seeing yourself in a light as being less than, comparing your inside with other people's outsides, somehow believing that you have to puff yourself up or be grandiose or buy things or add things onto yourself or something because you're just not good enough where you are. What you know, there's just something about being an alcoholic. And of course, I don't believe. I personally believe that although we come in here because of the addiction to alcohol, the addiction to drugs, I believe what the book says because it's obviously true. Because I've been around here for close to 33 years, and I haven't had a drink. That the alcohol is really a symptom of the disease, and the real disease. And we have a disease that's really named after the cure. You know, the temperate. We have a disease that's named after the drug that helps us the most. No woman, no car, no amount of money. No job description, no prestige, no nothing worked quite as well as just a few drinks. And I drank it. And so it says men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol, that they're restless, they're irritable, they're discontented, sober, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And, you know, I'm here with alcohol, so you know why you drank. You drank because sobriety sucked, you know what I mean? It didn't matter whether you had money. If you have money, sobriety sucks with money. If you don't have money, it sucks broke, you know? If you're in a relationship, that sucks. If you're not in a relationship, that sucks. If you're playing golf, that sucks, you know? If you're fishing, that sucks. If you're not fishing, it sucks. If it's raining, it sucks. If it's sunny, it just sucks, you know? It's just a whole sucky thing, you know what I mean? Sure, James, you don't know what it's like, but it's a problem on being on the planet Earth, and you know it's a dis-ease, and it's the problem is after you know and the drinking was probably the reason why I didn't blow my brains out before I was 18 years old. I mean, it's actually something that helped me, you know. So it's understandable by the problem is after you stop drinking, the disease of alcoholism. You know, I wish I had a better term for it. Feel sorry for ism, you know. Don't reject me ism. You know, please love me-ism, why don't I belong-ism, you know, hypocritical-ism. I mean, whatever, lack of integrity-ism, you know, why am I a piece of shit-ism, you know, whatever the ism is, whatever the thing is we have, this group of emotions and feelings so that when people are talking about means, about how they feel, everybody's sort of nodding their heads. Part of the ism is, like, nobody understands the way I feel-ism, you know what I mean? And then you go to and you live in a world where everybody is so completely different than you. What's the use of talking about it? Nobody will understand. So you walk into an A group, and all of a sudden there's a guy talking, and he's telling your story, you know. And you say, "What's that?" You know, for the first time, you realize I'm not alone. And whatever those feelings are and those emotions that we all have, you know, that's part of the ism. That's part of the thing that if we don't somehow assuage them, we're going back to drinking, or at least living a life of quiet desperation. The amazing thing for me is, and what I'm amazed at, is not so much everybody. I've sponsored a lot of people and I've watched a lot of people. And the truth is, and I can be wrong because I don't know everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it seems to me that I have never seen anybody who comes to AA to stop drinking that hasn't been able to stop drinking. You know, it says in the big book, almost like a throwaway line, we are over 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. And I know what they're talking about when they talk about a hopeless state of mind and body. I based upon just what I see in the room, and it may not be true, but it seems to me I'm with people who have already recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Because if what they're talking about, and this is what I think they're talking about, if they're talking about drinking against your will. See, I'm an alcoholic, you know, which what that means to me is there was a point in time in my life where I drank against my will, where I woke up in the morning and I said, man, I got to stop drinking. I'm not going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was drinking anyway. And then I woke up the next morning and said, I'm not going to drink today. And by 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I was searching for dimes, nickels, and quarters so I could get up $2.89 so I could go down and buy a quart bottle of Carlos Rossi Chianti and sit by the phonograph and play a Rainy Days and Mondays or something like that. All my favorite Alky tunes, I'm Mr. Blue, Only the Lonely, you know, Running on Empty, you know, Pirate Looks at 40, all those great old tunes, you know what I mean? And I could drink, and then you do it the next day and the next day and the next day until you give up. And you're not thinking in terms of self-pity. I mean, you obviously are living in the land of self-pity. You're not thinking of self-pity. You're not thinking about depression. You're just thinking about the next drink. You're just thinking about the and then finally you just give in and say, I ain't never gonna, you can't even envision life without drinking. You can't envision drinking anymore. You can't envision not drinking. The whole world turns into a bottle. Now, if you're an alcoholic, then I gotta believe you understand what I'm talking about. I don't know how you get here unless you go through that planet. You know what I mean? You gotta go through that planet. Well, and that's a planet that's death. You're dead. You know, I mean, just lower the coffin. You can't stop drinking. You've tried. Nothing works. Your life is over. Now, all of a sudden you're sitting in a room and you haven't had a drink in a week, 2 weeks, a month. Let me tell you something. You've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. Now, you may slip backwards. You may go back to that planet. You know what I mean? But I can tell you this. If you come from, I can't stop drinking. And all of a sudden the miracle happens and you can stop drinking. You've recovered. I don't know what you may be suffering from alcoholism now. You may be, you know, sucking your thumb, and you may be worried about romance. You may be worried about your job. But that is like nothing compared to the not being able to stop drinking deal. That's a whole different deal. We know that. You know that. When a person comes to a meeting, very rare, we don't get a lot of them. When a person comes to a meeting, no matter what's going on, and he raises his hand, he says, this is my first meeting, and he says, I can't stop drinking, man, everybody turns to him, and all of a sudden the meeting turns into a first-step meeting, because we know whatever the problem is we got, it's nothing compared to the I can't stop drinking deal. And I'm an alcoholic because I came through the I can't stop drinking deal. I know about that. But the fact of the matter is that what's amazing to me is, of course, once you get through that deal and you recover from that deal, then you get to deal with what the real problem is, and that is something called alcoholism, which goes on after you stop drinking, because now you got to deal with the crap that you should have dealt with when you were 16 years old or maybe 8 years old, but the only way you dealt with it was drinking or drugging or whatever it is you were doing, pornography, whatever it is you were doing to somehow not think or numb yourself up. Or basically, I think in a sense, it's almost like committing suicide. It's a way, I think it's really a way of committing suicide, because when I drank, it was a way of checking out of the planet. You know what I mean? Just checking out, which probably explains when you stop drinking. You think, I don't know about you, when I stopped drinking, I thought a lot about killing myself. I didn't think about drinking. As a matter of fact, I tell people, when people say to me, man, I'm not thinking about drinking, but I keep on thinking about killing myself. I say, that's progress, you know? Now listen, I'm going to tell you something. That's progress, you know what I mean? I would rather have somebody thinking about blowing their brains out than drinking, you know what I mean? Because if a guy is saying to me, I'm not thinking about drinking, I ain't going to drink, but I really think like killing myself, I say, man, you're committed, you know what I mean? You're committed, you know? You know, and because, you know, you can get past the killing yourself. You know, I remember I was worried about that for a while because I kept on thinking about dying and killing myself, because what happens is you can't drink, I'm not going to drink, there's no way I'm going to drink, but I'm in such pain, I'd like to blow my brains out. But, you know, I remember seeing the psychiatrist, I said, maybe I ought to talk to somebody about this killing myself thing, you know, and I was embarrassed to talk about it. You know, I went to a psychiatrist, so he asked me these questions. He says, well, have you bought a gun? I said, no. He says, have you made any attempts? He says, no. I said, have you done anything to try to attempt to kill him? He says, no. He says, don't worry. That's just a thing everybody goes. You know, I mean, he did one of these things like, the killing yourself thing, you know. And I was really, well, then I started, and it passed. It was a phase, you know, and it can come on again. But, I mean, it really is. The drinking is a way of checking out. It's somehow a way of dying, but you get to still breathe again. You know what I mean? You wake up the next morning, but at least for an hour, it's like you're in the grave. You know, and because life is just so crappy. You know, and I heard a guy say once. My problem was I was a nothing. I was always going to be a nothing. You know, he says, I used to put something in my body, it turned me into an almost. When you're nothing, almost is top of the world. And that was me. It somehow turned me into something instead of a nothing. And it didn't really matter that I had a law degree or whatever it was. And so I was talking about this Johnny Harris. I developed this this group of people. And what the amazing thing is about Alcoholics Anonymous is, when you, I don't know about you guys, but when I came into AA, and it's a real strange thing. I know I was grateful to be in AA. I know I love being in AA. I know I felt good about being in AA. And I know if you asked me, I would tell you I loved AA and I didn't want to drink. But as I look back on it, and even while I was going through it, it was sort of like a horrible experience. I mean, I don't know even how to explain this. There is no fear like sober fear. There's no fear like 3 o'clock in the morning, no money in the bank, a wife and 4 kids, they're going to foreclose on the house, fear, and you can't drink or drug, and you just got to sit there while the clock is ticking. You know what I mean? There's no fear like having, like the cancer or the sickness or the death or the problem. You know, when your mind starts running a million miles per hour and run through the tapes that what happened yesterday, what happened the day before yesterday, what happened a week ago, what's going to happen if they find out, what are they going to do to you, what's going to happen to your job, and starts running forward a week, a month, 2 years, and it's always going to be death. Believe me, for me, it's never probation. I'm going to be the one they put to death. It's going to be the guillotine. When they say fear is the corrosive thread that runs through our lives, they're talking about me. They're talking about high anxiety, fear, and what can I tell you? AA was incredible. Sobriety was incredible when I wasn't scared shitless. You know, I mean, I don't know how to, you know what I mean, you know? It's great, except the times when you're worried, you know? And it seems like you're worried 99% of the time. Every once in a while, you go to a meeting and you watch the dancing monkey, you know? I'm the dancing monkey tonight, you know? So you go to the meeting, you walk in the meeting, there's somebody that walked in here tonight that has a problem. They've been thinking about the problem all day. It's the same problem, you know? It's a horrible problem. It's a terrible problem. They're thinking about the problem. You understand what I'm saying? They're going to die. They don't know what to do about the problem. They've told themselves 50 times, I got to stop thinking about this problem. I can't do anything about it. I got to stop thinking about it. And they stop thinking about it for 5 seconds, and they start thinking about it again. They go to a meeting. They're sitting here tonight, okay? They're sitting here tonight. And all of a sudden, I start talking. They're still thinking about the problem. They're not even listening to me. They're thinking about the money. They're thinking about the boss. They're thinking about the job. They're thinking about their life. About 15 minutes into the meeting, because I've been there, all of a sudden, they start realizing there's a monkey talking in the front. There's a guy dancing in the front row. And they start listening to me. And all of a sudden, they start laughing. They start feeling good, like they're watching a movie. And they're saying, yeah, that's me. And they start feeling good. And that has a half-life, you know, if you're an alcoholic, and you get up and you say, hey, it's great, and I feel great, and I feel okay now, and that has a half-life until you get into the parking lot. And you get in your car, and you're driving away, and all of a sudden the craziness comes back. And the problem gets lifted up again. And all of a sudden you're going crazy until you get to the next meeting. And all of a sudden you find yourself going to meetings because you need a meeting like you need a drink. It's like I used to say, you know, I didn't really even suffer from alcoholism, really, until I stopped drinking. Because what I suffered from was drunk. Because the moment alcoholism raised its ugly head, whatever the hell, and you know, your alcoholic life seems the only normal life, because you don't know any other way of thinking except thinking bad thoughts about other people and blaming and all that negative stuff. And all I knew is something would come upon me. You can call it boredom or lack of boredom or whatever it was. I would turn to the guy and say, pull the car over, I need a drink. And when I said I need a drink, it wasn't like, you know, maybe I'd like to have a drink. It was like, I need a freaking drink. I need a drink. I needed a drink. You know, non-alcoholics don't understand this. I needed a drink. You know what I mean? I needed something. So you come in here and you know what happens? You need a meeting. I need this meeting. I need a meeting. And what happens is, and here's the thing, it's wonderful being sober, but it's almost like being drunk, in a sense. Because what happens is you don't get arrested for DUI, because they can't arrest you for driving while feeling sorry for yourself. They don't arrest you for driving while picking out on Haagen-Dazs. They don't arrest you for driving while fat. They don't arrest you for driving like feeling like an idiot. They don't arrest you for driving like wishing you were dead. They don't arrest you for driving for worry. You know what I mean? So the things that used to happen, the things that used to collapse in your life that were directly attached to booze don't happen to you. So there's a whole layer of stuff that makes your life a lot easier and it's a lot better. But you know what? You go from I need a drink to I need a meeting. And I'm not putting down meetings or sponsorship or anything, but you still, all of a sudden, your life, just staying alive and not blowing your brains out is dependent upon going to meetings and doing all this stuff, which is sort of like a good addiction for us, better than the old addiction, but it's still somehow, some way, you're still suffering from the same thing you were suffering from before, only without a chemical fix. because you're learning how to ingest a spiritual fix, which is really because it's a spiritual dis-ease. Okay? But it's the same sort of deal when you think about it. I needed the fellowship, and I needed the meeting like I needed the fellowship in the bar and like I needed the booze. And what happens is if you're living with yourself sober over a period of time, man, I wish I could tell you, at least in my life, and I just talk about my life, that this thing goes away in about a week, or it goes away in about 3 years, or it goes away in about 6 years. But 9 years sober, I'm flipping out. And I'm doing meetings. I'm sponsoring people. I'm doing step meetings. I mean, I'm doing this. I'm hitting this thing about as hard as you could hit it. And 9 years sober, there's something else to worry about. There's one other thing. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm worried about the money. I'm worried about the wife. I'm worried about the boss. I'm worried about the job. I'm worried about the circumstances of my life. And I've been doing this thing for 9 flipping years, as good as you can do it, and I'm still a basket case. Maybe not quite as bad, but it's, you know something, it's still there. And all of a sudden I open up the book, and I see in the book where it says something like, what it said, all of a sudden I see for the first time, that's how you learn this stuff. Not by reading it. It has to go from the head to the heart. And all of a sudden I read something that I've been reading for maybe 9 years and never quite understanding it. And I read this line and it says, we can rest on our laurels, but we're headed for trouble if we do. Alcohol is a sub, and it talks about we are not cured of this disease. Every day it says that we are not cured. That's what I'm talking about. There's no cure. 9 years I still got this thing going on. And what happens is there's a tendency to think and to believe that somehow it won't ever go away. It won't ever go away. 9 years, 10 years, 12 years, 15 years, 20 years, that it's never going to go away. And I'm going to tell you something. It goes away. It goes away, not... I don't want to say it goes away 100%, but it gets different. It gets different. It gets different. It gets pretty damn good, you know? But you want to know something? You know, there's a line in the book of James, you know, AA, one of the books that was fundamental in the big book was the book of James. And the first chapter of the book of James, it says, rejoice. Get this. You know, we don't rejoice. We suck our thumb. It says, rejoice when you have trials. That's what does it. He says, rejoice when you have, because when you persevere through trials and you endure through trials, which will be thrown at you, hell, life is a trial for me. I drank because I was awake. I mean, just being in the world, rejoice when you have trials, because if you endure through trials and instead of folding, you focus on Him, it will strengthen your faith and make you mature and things start happening. You get that profound personality change. But you know, there's, I don't know how to say it. It's, you know, you got to pay your dues. And, you know, we're alcoholics. And I'll tell you this. I'm a guy who is used to feeling better. You know how I feel better? Like this. Whack. I feel better in 5 seconds. 3 seconds. Listen, pulling into the parking lot of the bar, I started feeling better. Like Pavlov, I could feel better just sitting on the bar. As the drink is coming, I'm feeling better. I'm used to changing my feelings in 5 seconds. What's this going to meetings crap for 10 years? You know what I mean? You know, getting a sponsor and all that sort of stuff. And the bottom line is there's a certain amount of maturity that goes in here. And I know people don't want to hear it. I wanted 33 years. I developed a Wii. But it's interesting, the people that had what I wanted, and I didn't even know what they had, they all had 25 and 30 years. And I wanted to figure out the answer as to how I could get what they got in 20 minutes. You know? And you know what the bottom line is? You got to put in 20 years to get 20 years. You got to put in 30 years to get 30 years. Sometimes they reach the point in time where you can put all the ingredients in the pie. Sometimes you just have to put the pie in the oven and let it bake for, you know, an hour or so. You know, you just have to, sometimes we got to go into the oven, you know, you got to go through the 40 years in the desert thing. You got to go through the deal. You know, this thing where I started talking about Johnny H, you know, one of the things I learned is, you know, and these are all, I have all these old ideas that I think are right, that I don't think have anything to do with alcoholism, and it's all about alcoholism. Here's an old idea, and they're so subtly changed just by commitment and who you hang around. You know, I was told the men and women you hang around with now, you know, in the next 5 years, you know, will determine, you know, really what happens to you and who you are. The people you hang out with, the books you read will determine. So I'm hanging around this guy, Johnny H., and he was just, he was one of these people I looked up to. I just looked up, you know, like my sponsor, I looked up to him. And before he left for California, I drove him to the airport. And these are things, you run into people that you only meet for a few hours or something. They say things to you and it changes your life. You remember it forever. And I said to him, you know how you're scared to talk to people? Some people you're scared to talk to. I mean, you're just scared to talk to them. I don't even know, because it's part of being an alcoholic. Part of being an alcoholic is fear of people. I didn't think I was scared of people because I always drank with a lot of people. I drank in bars. I was loud. And, you know, my sponsor said, well, if you weren't scared of people, why'd you always have to be drunk to be around them? When you're at a party, why'd you always have to be drunk? Why did you always feel uncomfortable unless you were drinking? Whether it was to have sex or anything like that. Why, if you weren't scared of people? And you don't realize how scared you are. You don't even realize how scared you are of people even when you're in the midst of being scared of people. You go into a meeting and you got 2 months sobriety and somebody says, will you do the meeting? And you say, I'm not ready. That's what you say. You say, I'm not ready. You don't realize that what you're really saying in code is, I'm scared. I'll screw up. They won't like me. I'm scared of the group. I'm scared of AA. I'm scared of everybody looking at me. They'll judge me. I'll say something stupid. You don't realize that. All you say to yourself is, I'm not ready. You tell yourself lies. You lie to yourself. You know, you see, now here's the truth. The truth is, I'm scared to do a meeting. But you don't say, I'm scared to do a meeting. You say, I'm not ready. Just like you say to yourself things like, I don't care what other people think about me. You know, when you say that to people, you say, well, I don't care what they think about me. I don't care what they think about me. When your whole life is, what do they think about me? What did I sound like? What are they thinking about me? You know what I mean? So how can you get out of jail unless you know you're in jail in the first place? Unless you understand how rampant this disease is in you sober. You know, how can you get it? And, you know, so I was scared, just like people are scared. I have people that come up to me to ask me to be their sponsor, and they say, You know, I've been in the program for a little while, and I'm sort of looking, for people, you know, somebody to they say you ought to get a sponsor, and I've been thinking, I've been looking around, looking at different people, and I'm looking at my watch. I mean, should I put this guy out of his misery, or what should I do? You know, I said, Are you asking me to be your sponsor? I said, well, I know you got like a lot of people, and it's probably not. I said, are you asking me to be your sponsor? Is that what you want? You know? And he says, well, it's alcohol. You know what that is? You know what that is? That's alcoholism. Because when you're a piece of shit, and you know you're a piece of shit, and you know you're going to be rejected, because who knows better what a piece of shit you are than you, and you know that nobody likes you, and it's never going to work out for you, why put yourself in the deal again when they're just going to hurt your feelings? You know, that's what it is. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. See, that's not so bad, is it? Right? You know, so, but you understand that feeling, that thinking, when you understand that's you, that's the way you've been ever since you were a sperm. Ever since you were 5 years old, you may not have been drinking, but it's as much alcoholism. It's what we really suffer from in here. And you see, after the drinking goes, that deal is still there. Just because you used to drink down a beer and think you were king of the hill and you owned the group, you know what I mean? Because for the first time in your life, it made you feel like you were better than everybody else. Doesn't mean it doesn't mask the true alcoholism, which is without the beer, you feel like you're a piece of shit. But who's going to admit that they feel like a piece of shit when they're the greatest things in the world and nobody's better than them and nobody understands because you're king? I mean, that's the alcoholism. So John, I'm sitting there with Johnny and I'm like 5 years sober and I'm doing it. And so I get up the guts and I say, can I have your number? Can I call you? He's like a circle and he says this. He says, sure. I said, well, what's your number? And he says, this is what he says to me. He says, I'm in the book. I'm in the book, you know, just going, I'm in the book. I said, you're in the book? He says, your number's not like unlisted or something. He said, no, I'm in the book, call me up. And he said, and then he said to me this, and I don't know why sponsors and mentors and people I looked up to always felt they had to slap me. I don't know, maybe I was arrogant or maybe, I don't know what it is. I'm glad they did because I needed it. They always delivered the good news, but prior to delivering the good news and the wisdom, they always punched me in the gut. It was always a gut punch, and then while I was down, after they kicked me, they said, now listen, stupid, you know what I mean? Because, you know, they said, maybe I needed that. And this is what he said, listen, Russell, he says, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. That's what he said to me. That's exactly what he said to me. Now, I'm sure somebody probably said that to him one day. He said, I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm available. That stuck with me for 33 years. You know what happens when somebody calls me up and says, will you do a meeting, you know, for the gay pride group? I mean, you know what I say? I say yes. Because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm available. But you see, that's, but you know what my old idea is? My old idea is to say no, because I'm not gay. My old idea is to say no, because they don't like, my old idea is to say no, because it's far away. My old idea is to say no, to do as little as possible, and get out of it. You know why? Because that's what alcoholics do. They make excuses. Because if you're an alcoholic, you're an excuse-aholic. You're like, I don't have time-aholic. I got other things in my life-aholic. You know, unless I had a guy that I respected that sort of somehow said to me, if you're in this deal and somebody says to you, asks you to do anything, you say yes. That's what we do. Unless I understood that that was the deal and I committed to it, you know, if I didn't commit to that, I would have been drunk a long time ago. Now, the truth is, I had to learn from there, because I remember one time I called my sponsor and I had the flu. And I was going to a meeting, and I had to make the coffee. And he says, well, don't you have the flu? He says, yeah, but I have a commitment. He says, Russell, you're sick. You're going to give people your flu. I said, go to bed. But I literally had to have people say, no, you don't have to go, because I would have gone. Because, you know, I almost feel better of erring on the side of being crazy about the commitment, because I am so used to sliding out of things or walking away from things, we're not in being in this thing for extra credit. And I know that most people don't really make it. And I know how much work you have to do and how committed you have to be in order to get where you have to go. And, you know, so I wanted, and I had a desire to want what these people had. And I just had the, I don't know what it was, the hope that maybe one day it really would get better. I'm not saying it gets good. It gets okay after 3 years. It gets okay after 5 years. It gets okay after 10 years. But I mean, the way the old-timers had it, the things that I saw in front of me. When I saw Al Kennedy, and I had 3 months, and I was sitting in a meeting, and he was doing the meetings, and he was transparent, and he was like genuine, and he was a man's man, and you could tell, you know, he was comfortable in his own skin. He's talking in front of 50, 60 people, and he's talking like he's talking to his best friend in his living room, and he was genuine, and he was authentic, and he was lifting people up, and all that sort of stuff, and he made people feel good, you know. And one of the kind of guys says, man, I wish I could know this guy. I wish I could get to know him. And he walks out of the room, and I turn to my sponsor and says, that guy's great. And my sponsor says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And I didn't even believe. I couldn't even wrap my mind around that, you know, because I'm 5 years so I'm 3 months sober. You know, I got a hangnail. That's good for 5 meetings. You know what I mean? The boss looked at me funny. You know what I mean? Dying of cancer, you're doing a meeting, you're lifting people up, you don't even mention it. I said to him, it's like I didn't even hear him. I said, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, Al Kennedy's dying of cancer. I said, what are you talking about? He didn't say anything about dying. He didn't say anything about dying of cancer. I mean, I would have said, you know, somewhere I would have said, well, it's good to be here. You know, I am dying of cancer, but I wanted to be here. You know, got a little something out of it. You know what I mean? But he's dying. And he says he's dying of cancer, Russell. And he says, and you know what it did? You know, we have a part of the book called Vision for You. Vision for You, where it changed my vision from a not drinking, like the not drinking club. You know how he's not drinking? What? Hanging in? I'm hanging in there. You know, life is hanging in there one day at a time. You know, it's okay, you know. And all of a sudden, I'm running into these guys that are dying of cancer, and it's like it's no problem. I mean, you know what it's like to run into a guy who's dying of cancer, and I'm running into guys that they got no problems, and they're sucking their thumb, and they're worried, and they're complaining. I'm going to discussion meetings where every son and his mother is sucking their thumb, talking about this, talking about that. Here's some guy with 30 years, and he's dying of cancer, and it's like it's a walk in the park. And I'm saying, what the? You know, what? 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 I mean, this is not bullshit. I'm watching it happen right in front of me. You know, I see the pierced hands. I see everything. I mean, I'm looking at this. I'm looking at these guys, and, you know, it's like, you know, Tiger Woods plays golf, and I play golf. We use the same clubs. We play in the same course, Doral. But trust me, we're playing a different game. Now, I may have been an AA, and Johnny Harris was an AA, and Al Kennedy was an AA. But let me tell you something. We are playing a different game. Whatever, you know, whatever I think sobriety is, whatever they think, they're in a different deal. You know, and Bill Wilson talks about the next frontier, emotional sobriety. And he says the real problem with alcohol is it says unhealthy dependencies. And you start realizing that there is a different deal in here. They talk about it. It starts getting popular. There's two different fellowships. There's the fellowship of the not drinking club, the thumb-sucking crybabies, and then there's the fellowship of the spirit that they talk about in the last page, the fellowship of the spirit. You'll meet some of it where it says we've experienced much of heaven. We've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. The central fact in our lives is that God lives in us, in our hearts, miraculously. He'll do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And you realize that this other fellowship, whatever it is, it exists within AA. And there's not a lot of people in it. And it starts being divided up. It starts being populated around the sixth step, where it even tells you this is a step that is going to separate out the men from the boys, the women from the girls. And the men are going to be those people that move out from just mere physical sobriety to those people who repeatedly try this thing because they want to grow in his righteousness in the image and the image of their creator, the way they understand it, to be better and more perfect in that deal, you know, like they talk about in the 11th step. And you start realizing there are people that are just here just to stay sober so they can go out and grab the crap that they were running after out there. And there are people that are coming here that are completely committing their life utterly to God. And they just want to help other people and they want to be servants. And there's two different people. And the funny thing is you realize after being an AA for many years that it's not a 50-50 deal. It's not like 50% of the people are in one and 50% of the people in the other. It's like a 95-5 deal. It's like 95% of the people are just in it for the not drinking and give me the money. And give me the sex and give me the Viagra and give me everything they got out there and worrying about and sucking their thumbs about what if they don't happen to go into discussion meetings. And 5% of the people aren't complaining at all and they're just looking to see whether they can come back and help anybody they can and not thinking about themselves. And all of a sudden, you read that thing in the big book. It says that when we make this decision, you know, it talks about how we're selfish and self-centered above everything. We must get rid of it or it kills us. It says God makes that possible. He says when we sincerely make such a decision, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his work well. If we stay close to him and do his work well. I mean, listen, this ain't my opinion. I'm quoting from the book. I don't know what fellowship. I'm an AA. That's what it says. We stay close to him and perform his work well. It says all sorts of remarkable things happen. It says he lose fear of people, places, and all that sort of stuff. That's what it says. Fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter, we were reborn. He says we think carefully when we do these things, you know, making sure that we're ready to turn our lives utterly over to him. See to it, the relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is AA. That's what they have in the rooms. First things first. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all other things will be added unto you. It's all about God, 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 God. And you go into AA, and you say that stuff, and they get uncomfortable, and they say, we don't want to hear that religious stuff. And I have a book. I have a fellowship where the wisdom of the room say, we don't want to hear about religion or religious stuff. It's not about that. And I have a book where it says we lose all prejudice against organized religion. We begin to see where they might be right. So who should I believe? Should I believe the book or should I believe the wisdom of the rooms? A bunch of alcoholics that are going to be drinking 90% of them soon anyway and are sitting around sucking their thumbs and don't really want to do this thing and want to rationalize their way out of it, or should I believe the book? And then I got that other problem. I'm an alcoholic. All I do is worry about what people think about me. So what's going to happen if I do it, if I start talking about God and talking about this stuff, you know? You know, they're going to laugh at me at the rooms. I mean, what could be possibly worse than an alkie sitting next to you that doesn't even pay your Visa bill thinking badly of you? You know what I mean? I mean, what kind of sobriety is that? What kind of sobriety is that? What is that? I mean, I came into this room to put my buck in the plate so at 14 years sober, I can sit around with some turkey in the back saying, put the plug in the jug, is pissed at me because, you know, I'm talking about religion or something like that, like I'm worried about this, as if they can kick me out of here for that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't think Al Kennedy was worried about that crap, you know what I mean? I want what they had. I want that rocket ship ride. And how many people have that deal? How many people have that deal in here? Let me tell you something. One half of 1%. You know, but that's what I want. You know, here's an example of one of the guys that got this and sold himself short. This is on page 266. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day as we place the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are as we place the old impatient chopping to the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks unimportant in themselves with tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my AA years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, get this, above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. You know, those are the guys I hung out with. That's the stuff I want. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly fought our path. That was their path. That's what I want. They asked Bill Wilson, he said, what do you think of a person who doesn't drink and doesn't go to meetings? He says, I have no respect for them because I have no respect for them because they have no gratitude. Because how can a person be lifted and be recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body and then take this stuff and leave AA so he can go out and do his own life? That's a person that obviously doesn't love God, doesn't respect God, certainly hasn't committed his life to God, because in God's world, in this program, we commit our will and our lives over to his care. And that means we do what we want God to do. What do I say to a guy who says, I know all about God and I believe in God, but I'm not going to AA because I don't need it? Well, maybe you don't need it. What about the guy that's coming in tomorrow that needs to hear what you have to say? What about giving back service? You know what that tells me about that person? That tells me he's selfish. He tells me that he's selfish and he's self-centered and that he has the disease running all through him, but he's arrogant and he's defiant and he doesn't give a crap about anybody except himself. Mm-hmm. And he's just a rationalizer and he's just an alcoholic. And pretty soon he's going to be drinking soon anyway. Because you know why? He's smack dab in the middle of the disease. But how do you teach that to an alcoholic? How's an alcoholic going to get that deal? If you're not drinking and you got the Cadillac, you know what I mean? And you got the car and you got the gal or the guy or whatever it is, the romance, and it's going for you. And seemingly you got the material goods, and that's all you're here for anyway. You know what I mean? And somehow you sort of think that you're sober only because you're doing it and you went to meetings for a while and now you're better now, you don't need it, and you walk away. How do you tell a guy like that anything about God when he thinks he's God? And the book says the first things first, first of all, you got to quit playing God, and they don't even know what you're talking about. And people ask me, why do some people make and some people don't? And I don't know why. You know, they say people drink because they stop going to meetings. Well, you know, that sounds good. You know, maybe you say to yourself in some sort of powerful way, like you sort of say, well, that's okay. That won't happen to me because I'm never going to stop drinking. But what you don't realize is the same people that come to meetings that say, I started drinking because I stopped going to meetings. At one time, they were in a meeting, and they heard somebody say that, and they said to themselves, I'm never going to stop going to meetings. And so you got to ask yourself, really, not what you really have to ask yourself is the question behind that, is why do people stop going to meetings? Why do people stop going to the sponsor? And why they stop doing it is because they have no gratitude. Because they don't believe that sobriety is a gift from God. They don't really believe in God. Because if they really believed in God, they'd understand this is God's miracle, and they owe their life to God, and they should forfeit their life to God. And all they should try to do is do what God wants them to do, and stay close to him and do his work well. But you can't tell an alcoholic that when he's in this disease, because he'll tell you to mind your own business. You work your program, I'll work my program. But you see, friends, there's only one program. The road is very, very narrow. There's only one program. There's not 52. You know, here's what we think. We think there's like 60 people in this room. We think there's 60 different people, different programs. I got some bad news for you. There's only one program. There's one book. There's one program. You know what it says? It says once we sincerely make the decision, being all powerful. He gives us everything we need if we stay close to him. You know what it means when he says being all powerful? There's no higher power. There's a highest power. It's the highest power. Now, I don't care what you call the highest power, but there's only one power. It's the highest power. In AA, we call that power God. That's what they call in the book, God. And you give, it says you give your will and your life over to God. I'm sorry, I'm quoting from the book. It says there is only one that has power. That one is God. May you find him now. It says you can't manage your life. It says no human power. You know, you must seek God. That's the whole thing about seeking. I'm sorry. I mean, I'd like to be able to say it in such ways that people don't get mad at me, but that's the program. That's what the deal is. You know, and whenever I hear people say things like, you work your program, I'll work my program, or somehow there's 50 different programs, that's the reason we're in the mess we're in today. That's the reason why people are making it at 7 years and 10 years and 12 years and 15 years and then falling off the wagon and drinking. In this month alone, I had a friend who had 2 years and walked away from the program and committed suicide. Had everything in the world to live for, committed suicide. I just read in the paper today, I'm sure you guys read it, about a gal who was a judge who had many years. You know what I mean? And she had to take herself off bed. She got to rehab. She had like 20 years. I knew the gal, you know, now she's in rehab. You know what I mean? They're dropping like flies. Like flies. And you know why? Because they haven't committed themselves to God. They haven't done what this guy did. You know, you can sort of tell where this guy was at when he says, above all, I have gained the greatest thing according to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from from showing a little love for others and serving them as he can. You know, I can almost hear him say, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know what fellowship you're in, but I'm available. You know, all these guys that got this same, who do this thing and do it that way, they talk the same way, they think the same way. I think like my sponsors think. You know, exactly the way they think. I think like, you know, there's only one type of sobriety that I'm interested in. And the guys that have that sobriety, believe me, they're more the same than they are different. They think the same about their life. They think the same about other people. They think the same about what their job is to do. Their job is to be a maximum service to God and other people. That's the only kind of sobriety I want. I don't want the kind of sobriety where you're 20 or 25 years sober and you're pissed off and you're on your fourth marriage and you're popping Viagra because you think the answer to your problems is, you know, having a hard, you know, hard on for 4 hours or something like that, or you're chasing women or you're chasing men or it's about romantic relationships. I don't want that kind of sobriety. You know, that doesn't mean you can't have it. Go after it. Have a good time with it. You know what I mean? That's not what I want. Now, the people that want what I have, what I'm talking about, they'll listen to what I say, they'll maybe look at this a little bit differently, and they'll do it. That may be only three people in the room. Those are the only people I'm talking to. But the bottom line is, I never know what three it is. You know what I mean? I don't know. It could be you, you, and you. It could be all of you. I don't know. You know, I mean, I know that not everybody's going to want my deal. Some people are going to say, do you believe that fool, that idiot? Because you wanted something. The natural man thinks this stuff is bullshit. Really? The natural man, you know what I mean? Some guy said, you know, said to me one day, he says, man, he says, you know, I've heard a lot of guys talk about a lot of guys like you in the fight. He says, that's because you haven't talked about the guys that hate me. You know what I mean? I got a whole other group, you know. There's a whole other group that think I'm full of shit, you know. But that's okay. But you know something? That's okay. That's okay because, you know, one of the benefits of this deal is fear of people and economic insecurity leave you. Does that mean you get rich? No, you can be broke, but that doesn't bother you. And what also doesn't bother you a lot is, you know, and you're able to speak your own mind and say your piece and talk fast at meetings without running through the filter. What will this sound like? What will they think about me? You know what I mean? You know why you can do that? Because you're not worried about what other people are going to think about you. You know, because you're not. Because, you know, at least if they hate me, they hate me. I used to have people that hated me, and they weren't even hating me because I was acting like somebody else in order for them to like me. I was trying to act so much like somebody else, and then they'd hate me and say, wait a second, you hate me, but you're hating the wrong guy because that isn't really me. I'm somebody else, you know what I mean? At least if they hate me, you know? But the good thing is if they like me, they like me, and I don't have to make believe how am I supposed to sound or what am I supposed to say. I'm just myself, and they lie. So the people that like me because of the way I am, and the people that hate me because of the way I am. But at least I know who my friends are, and I don't have to play the game of acting a certain way, you know, to have people like me. Does any of that make any sense? I don't know. It makes sense to me. So, oh, my God, look at that. It's been, my time is up. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.